I'm here today with Ashley Coleman, and she is one of my dear friends and a therapist at Solace. She does a lot of work with our kids and families in the office, and we're going to talk to her today about the subject of discipline. So as a mom of teenagers, I know that this can be a hard topic. So she's going to address discipline today with young children, as well as bring in some of the discipline techniques and things that we think about even with our older kids. So welcome, Ashley.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. Why don't we start today with the question of what is discipline? I'd love for you to talk about that just a little bit, maybe just some of how you think about it, but also how you explain it to your clients when they come in.
Sure. So for me, discipline is not just the things we do trying to correct our children once they've done something wrong. Discipline is everything that we do in teaching our children and bringing them up into adulthood. And so it is the routine and the structure of our home, and it's the activities that we choose to get them into, and it's taking them to school, and it's also, you know, teaching them when they've done wrong and guiding them down different paths. And I think I often find that when we're talking about what is discipline, parents are not thinking about all of the positive structural things that they do that work in this way for their kids. And so I guess I'd like to bring that out here at the first. I also think about in Hebrews when, you know, God talks about how he's a father and he disciplines us, and that discipline is our way of showing love and showing that we care. And so discipline is, while difficult, it's one of the strongest ways that we show our kids that we love them and we care about them.
That's great. I love that idea, just a broader idea of what is discipline and how we use that in a loving way to help our kids and to shape our kids and to draw them closer to the Lord. So I think that's a great place to start. What are some of the areas that you see parents really struggling in when it comes to their kids, when it comes to disciplining their kids, or maybe just some of the misunderstandings that you see?
With younger kids, and you know what, I say that, and then I think, no, I actually think this goes across the board. I think by the time that parents are in my office, they're really often just saying, I can't stop getting on to my kid, and my kid will not do what they're supposed to do.
Right.
And so, you know, just trying to figure out how to get through to our kids, how to teach them in a way that they'll understand, is perhaps one of the hardest ones, whether we're talking about a 2 or 3 year old, a 8, 9, 10, or 15, 16, 17, and just, or maybe even 30. It's just hard.
It is hard. Oftentimes, I feel like I'm in a power struggle with my teenagers. Talk a little bit about power struggles. I think we can get into a power struggle with a 2-year-old just like we can get into a power struggle with a 16-year-old. It looks different, but it's still that idea of that tug of war between who's going to be in control. And I know that's not necessarily how we need to parent, but it seems to happen so easily. Talk about that a little bit and how we can maybe make that as healthy as possible.
Absolutely. Yes, it can happen no matter what age you're in, for sure. So I even noticed that with my toddlers, and the difference in a power struggle and in dealing with the defiance, the opposition of our children has everything to do with how we feel when we are entering that situation. And so as the parent, as the adult, we have to have more, you know, thoughts and emotion into it than our children do. And so if we have taken care of ourselves, if I am doing what I need to do for self-care, if I'm taking breaths and breaks, that's actually how I avoid the power struggle. And so our kids are always going to offer them to us. They're always going to be ready to tell us how they're right and we're wrong. And the difference in that power struggle and in them just learning how to listen and submit and obey and heed and have the wisdom to yield has to do with how we are approaching it. And so if I'm approaching a situation with my toddler or my teenager, and I'm thinking, I am right, and you are wrong, and you will do what I want, that is exactly what my kid is approaching the situation with, and that would be the definition of a power struggle. But if I'm coming at this with this sense of, I love you, I have your best interest at heart, and I am assured of my place as your parent in your life, and I'm going to approach this calmly, I'm going to be able to listen to you, and I'm going to wait until you realize that there's another way to go about this, they're still coming at it with the whole, I know everything, but it isn't a power struggle because I am not emotionally in the same place.
So we have a lot of control over whether this becomes a power struggle or not, is what I hear you saying.
Yes, yes. And that is probably the biggest thing that I would like to be able to talk about just for a minute today would be about this connection that we build with our kids. And this starts when they are infants or whenever they have come into your home, if you've adopted or you're fostering. But you can begin it at any point in time and then revisit it. It's good throughout all of life. And it's this heart that the primary foundation of our discipline is our connection with our kids, not the correction of our kids. And so,
say that again. That's great.
The heart of our discipline is our connection with our children, not our correction of them. And so if you can remember, you know, the sweetest moments with your child, those are your moments of connection when you just, your heart is filled and in love. And if they're little, they're probably cuddling. And if they're older, they might have told you thank you. And you just feel like that relationship is sweet and special. And that is the foundation of healthy discipline, healthy life instruction, and healthy relationship. And so, you know, if you're looking, working with your toddler, being able to bend down and get on their eye level and look at them and help them talk about how they're feeling when they're defying you, help name that feeling for them, you know, maybe hold them in your arms while you're talking about the bad choices that they made. Those types of things, physical connection is really, really helpful. As they get older, the physical connection tends to wane somewhere around adolescence. And, you know, then it's more of just being able to physically sit and make eye contact that becomes really meaningful, or that connection turns into them being willing to spend one-on-one time with you, you know, running to the store or going out to get Andy's or Starbucks or something. And that connection point and that you hear me, you get me, even when I'm upset, even when I don't make sense, applies when they're 2, when they're 12, and when they're 17.
It's that acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
So allowing your kids to have big feelings, intense feelings, to express that, and we're always trying to help them learn healthy ways to express it, but it's this idea that I will accept you even when you have big feelings, strong emotions, when you're coming at me like, I still am accepting you, and I am managing my own emotional response, my own emotional reaction in that moment.
Yes, and I think that whole managing, I am managing my own, is for me the most exhausting part of parenting, but I think for all of us, you know, it's because we're still human in this situation, and so yeah, that's the most powerful part, is that they can know that that relationship is on a firm foundation no matter what is happening, whether they're mad at you or you're mad at them or however that has gone, that relationship is not in question.
I think that's great. I think that's a good word for all of us. And I'm especially thinking about parenting teenagers because that's the phase of life that I'm in. And being able to meet them where they are is huge. and being able to have some sort of connection, whether it's just like I'm looking you in the eye right now, because they don't want to be hugged. They don't want to. They don't want all that physical touch as much as they used to when they were little. But trying to make those connection points is, I think that's a good step in the right direction.
It looks different for different kids. And so if you're really struggling with connecting with teenagers, if you can think back to things that y'all used to enjoy doing together when they were younger, finding a way to bring that forward can really be helpful. You know, did they used to really like to go shopping with you at the grocery store? Well, they may not want to do that now, but if you went to a store they were interested in, they might go shopping with you.
Right.
So kind of just trying to say, or, oh, we always really enjoyed watching this franchise of movie together. And just kind of going back to some things that you remember being moments of that connection and bringing them forward into the present.
Yeah, that's good. Because life gets so busy that we're just doing the next thing and we forget that within all that busyness, there are these moments that we can connect with our kids. I'd love to ask you about that toddler preschool age and how you as a parent just engage with very big, sometimes volatile emotions.
So I think that's really fun. I have a very fun toddler myself who has lots of big feelings. And I think it really starts with knowing that it is okay that they have big feelings. That is not something wrong with them, and it's not something wrong with you as the parent or me as the parent. It's a reality, and it just is. And kind of releasing this pressure of, like, fear that something's wrong with something in this system when they have big feelings. I also use this analogy all the time of talking about feelings in terms of colors. And so some of us have kind of pastel feelings. They're just lighter. They are still present. They still exist, but they're just very, very calming colors. And then you can move up that color spectrum and get in those central ones, but then you can get to the really vibrant colors. People that just have deep feelings. And you know, we can have the pastel pinks, but then we've got these deep, deep
right.
pinks. And greens and blues. And so being able to just recognize where your child would normally fall in that spectrum. The moment to be concerned if something's going on is if they are typically one way and you begin to find them another. So if you have typically got a very vibrant, emotional, deep feeling child and they're suddenly seeming more pastel to you, that is something to pay attention to. If they're normally pastel and now they're vibrant, we want to pay attention to that too. But in general, we don't want to, you know, try to talk to ourselves just as parents, like something's wrong with my kid because they're vibrant, or wrong with my kid because they're pastel and nothing seems to faze them, and that could doesn't have to be a problem. Whenever they do have these big, big feelings, again, this moment of connection is huge. So you get down on their eye level. Maybe you're going to hold their hands, have them sit in your lap if possible, and just allow them to feel. Allow them to cry. Be there with them in that moment. Sometimes it's appropriate to walk away. That would be more of a tantrum, less of the big feelings thing, and maybe more of a conversation for a different question. But if they're really just having big feelings, they're disappointed, you've told them no and they don't like it, it's so easy to just be like, I said no, get over it, in our heads. And we even don't even necessarily want to admit that that's kind of how we think about our kids, but it often is, especially with those toddlers who are just coming at us with questions and wants and things all the time. And so giving them space to have an emotional reaction to what they're having the emotional reaction to, and that doesn't mean that your presence is gone. So you're not really talking, you're just there with them while they're feeling, helping them calm down. We call this co-regulation. And so they're going to get their cues for how to emotionally respond from you as their parent. So, you know, if we walk away too many times while they're in big feelings, there begins to be this sense of, you know, there's a lack of connection. That just every single time that that happens, it can separate that connection between us and our kid. And allowing space for feelings, I think, is really, really big.
Yeah, I think as we think about discipline, just the broader sense of the word, I hear you saying maintain the connection, that it's all about the connection that you have with your child. Give them space to feel, whether those are big feelings or not, give them space to feel, and manage your own emotional response, your own internal emotional response. That those are some of the key concepts that you continue to go to when it comes to the whole kind of broad spectrum idea of discipline.
Yes.
Good. Anything else about discipline that you oftentimes share with clients, share with the parents of clients, maybe even talking about consequences and how you use consequences? Because I know that when I think of discipline, I often think about this idea of consequences. One thing that I share with parents is that you do not want your own anger to be the child's consequence.
Absolutely.
And so we want to take that off the table. What are some things that you talk about when it comes to consequences?
Sure. Yeah, so this first phase is allowing the feelings and maintaining the connection. And so once the feelings have calmed, and that is really important, we can't be in the middle of a big emotional thing and here, now I can't do the thing I wanted to do. You know, once those feelings have calmed, that's when you would offer the discipline. So, for instance, I'll give you an example with my toddler. She has a very strong will. She knows exactly how she wants things all the time and frequently has to get told no. So let's say I had told her that she wasn't going to be allowed to wear her nightgown to school today. She was going to have to put on play clothes. We had a meltdown about that last week, actually, so that's probably why that's first on my mind.
It's fresh on your mind.
Very fresh. She was sobbing when I told her that she could not wear her nightgown. And so I just sit there and wait, and I hold her hand and look in her eyes and wait for the big tears to go. And then I continue to require what I've asked of her. And so in that discipline, you know, I don't need to be punishing her for having her big feelings. I just need to be patient until she can hear me again. And I often say things like, you don't have to like it. You can be upset. We still have to put these clothes on. We still have to do this next thing. And so a lot of the time, especially with young children, that is enough. The consequence is truly having to have my upset feelings and still comply and obey. And we don't really have to continue to add extra consequences on, especially when they're that young and we're just trying to teach them these basic life skills of submission to authority and my parents and, you know, learning how to do things like that. Now, if they have truly done something wrong, so here we go again with another very fresh on my mind example. My 7-month-old was playing with a toy that my 3-year-old wanted. And she went over and she pulls it out of his hand and he falls over. He was sitting up. He falls over on the ground. Well, that wasn't safe. That wasn't kind. That wasn't respectful. That wasn't many of the things that I want her to learn. And so instead of yelling at her like, I can't believe you did that, give that back to him, that doesn't work very well with the young children because they learn so much by seeing and doing. And so I go over there, I take that toy back, I have her stay with me, and I talk her through. And I talk it through starting with how she felt. You were jealous that he had this toy. Yeah. And you wanted to be able to play with it. Yeah. Was it a good choice to take it away from him? No. No, you need to ask and let him give it back to you. And you don't have to knock him over, do you? No. Okay, so let's practice doing that again. And I give the toy back to my son. My daughter asks for it, and we give it to her. And what we're doing in that discipline is a lot of things. We're connecting Our relationship is still there because I stopped what I was doing to meet her at what was most important to her in that moment, which was getting that toy.
And that's the connection.
Yeah, I stopped for that. Then I'm down on her level, so there's not this imposing fear component that is disarmed in her by me being down on her level. I'm helping her tell the story of what happened. That is super important when we want long-term learning from our discipline, is to reinforce what happened that caused them to get into trouble and why that happened. So in that process, I'm having her think through, yeah, I felt jealous, that emotion, and then I made a bad choice, and now I can feel jealous. And then practicing, that positive practice is the last piece that's really important. Practicing doing the right choice and seeing the result that comes from that also. A lot of the time, what I find that parents do is stop short of the positive practice. There's a lot of that correction, but not that opportunity to practice the correct choice or a better choice or a good choice. That also continues on into school-age children. And so especially by then, having them, you know, again, with that connection point, say they've been at school and they got in trouble, getting some kind of a cuddle in, or even just being able to sit privately on their bed, whatever would fit naturally with your relationship with your child, and just having them tell the story. Okay, so I heard that you, you know, were talking during group work today, and you know, you got a demerit for that. And what was going on? And especially by the time they're preteens, but honestly, I really will encourage you to always do this. Let them tell the story from their perspective. Well, you know, I wanted to be in a group with these people, and because they're the ones that are actually going to do a good job, but I ended up in this group with these people. And just listening to your child. It is so easy to be like, well, so what did you do to make this happen? Or what mistake did you make? Or what could you do better or different next time? And taking, again, here's that connection moment of just listening to their side of the story and being on their side. Always be on their side. Now, I don't mean that you're going to, you know, go and bring the teacher something and make a big stink about stuff. But in that conversation, you're on their side about whatever hurt their feelings or upset them or frustrated them. You're there with them in that. And so if they are old enough and know how to name their own feeling in that moment, having them do that is good. If they don't know, helping them name it. So you were really frustrated when the coach put you on the bench and you didn't get to play. Yes, that made me so angry. And then you ended up yelling at the ref later, huh? Yeah, I ended up yelling at the ref. Well, so if you could do that again, once more, I'm talking about, you know, older kids at this point. So if you could do that again, would you still yell at the ref? No, because now we're going to have to do all this running around and practice. You know, so just even having them tell that story, identify their feelings, and again, by the time they're older, the positive practice is having them think through, would they still want to make that choice again? If they tell you yes, maybe you want to speak into that. Maybe you don't. Maybe you totally agree with them. Maybe you're like, yep, you got in trouble and that was fine because that was appropriate. Or maybe you want to help them figure out another way to do it, but letting them kind of come up with those ideas.
I love that because I think what discipline is doing is it's building ownership. And so you are taking a lot of ownership when your child is very young, and you are transferring that ownership as they get older and older and finally are older teenagers ready to leave your home. You're teaching them. You're teaching them things like, I'm always for you. I love you. I'm connected to you. And yet, I'm going to give you opportunity to feel what you feel and see what you did wrong. And some of those are higher level thinking skills, which you are allowing them to develop as they get older. So it's this progressive nature of building the skills when they are young and then allowing them to take more and more ownership as they get older and having this broader view of discipline that is very rooted in connection, is very rooted in my own management of what's going on inside of me, and this idea of walking them through, listening to their perspective, but walking them through, would there be a different way to do this? If you could do this again, how would you do this? I love it because it's a conversation. And I understand that not every instance of discipline that we have with our kids is this lovely back and forth conversation. But I can come at it from that perspective. I think that's a good reminder for me, is that discipline is interactive, that it's built on relationship, that it's built on connection. I need to try to understand what they're thinking, feeling, how they're experiencing this. And it may require consequences at the end of this conversation. But I love that you're talking about discipline is also about timing. It's not, you know, all at once, I'm going to lay down the law and this is the way it's going to be. It's a conversation at the end of which may be a consequence they don't like, but I'm giving it enough time to let the child experience the learning that can come through this discipline.
Right. So you want them to have this intermediate stage of the learning, or else you're going to have a really hard time changing their behavior because they're not going to connect how they feel, how they felt, what happened, and the consequence together. And that is neurologically what you're really doing within their brains when you create the space for them to calm down, tell the story, consider, you know, a better option, practice a better option. So consequences. I always encourage parents that consequences can fit the crime. Also, consequences can be pretty short-lived if that can be appropriate. So maybe your kiddo just went to kindergarten and they're getting sent home that they won't stop talking in class. Now, you may have an older kiddo doing this, but I see that a lot happening with kindergartners, just learning how to be in a classroom and they won't talk. Well, so what they're doing that they shouldn't be doing is talking. So maybe their consequence, again, you're going to have gotten them to tell the story. Maybe they're going to tell you that the reason they were talking is because the person next to them was doing something wrong, or, you know, their water bottle was going to fall over. And maybe they were trying to be very kind and loving. And so they got in trouble for that. And you need to kind of help them, again, tell that story and connect it. But maybe you're going to have them sit on their bed, and for 5 minutes, they're going to have to say, I will not talk while my teacher is talking. I keep talking when my teacher is talking. I'm not supposed to talk when my teacher is talking. Whatever kind of thing you want to say. But that consequence is getting to talk. And we've done it for 5 minutes, and we're done. We're not going to continue this into our whole evening. We're going to move on with whatever our activities and our life would be for the rest of that day. If your kiddo won't quit slamming a door, well, let's just slam the door for 5 minutes and see how fun that is. Again, if you have taken the time to allow them to calm down and tell the story, it is not fun to slam a door when you're not angry. So you're going to have that moment for the learning to happen and giving them that opportunity. Maybe they're hitting. Instead of hitting walls, let's hit pillows. Let's hit stuffed animals. Let's hit couch cushions. And let's do it for an appropriate amount of time. Usually a good general rule is 1 minute per year of age when they're younger and in those ways. Now, once you get older, the consequences become more complicated, but I still encourage parents to try to have it match whatever your child has done that you're wanting them to learn to do differently. And so maybe you sent your kid to their friend's house and you didn't think they were going to go anywhere else, and they ended up going on walks around the playground or around the neighborhood and just kind of got in some stuff that made you not feel really good and safe, and you felt like they didn't tell you every time they left or went somewhere and they just weren't following your rules. Well, you know, we can look at that opportunity, and it can be one of those things like, all right, so next time you go, you're going to have to check in with me every 30 minutes and let me know where you are. And once I feel like you're doing a good job of letting me know where you are, we'll relax this. A lot of the time I see parents wanting to do things like, you didn't follow that privilege right, so that privilege is gone. But again, we're trying to teach them how to do it well. And so to me, the boundary might not be you don't get to go to your friends and hang out with that friend anymore. The boundary is you're going to have to check in with me a lot more.
Yeah, I think that's really wise to if we can make the consequence part of the teaching, I think that that's a win-win. Because they're learning something, and that's the idea of discipline, is how can they learn something that they can then take and, you know, extrapolate into other situations. Like, I learned this, and now I understand this concept, and I can use it in other areas of my life. So not being so punishing. Also, if you as a parent cannot be consistent in enforcing that, then it becomes, you know, almost laughable. You know, like, well, mom gave me this consequence, and I know that she's not going to follow through. So I hear that a lot, you know, from kids. They know what their mothers and fathers are going to be able to follow through with. And so make it where you can actually, you know, go the distance with this consequence. And I like that you're saying, like, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. Mm-hmm. We can be very measured with mm-hmm. these consequences.
Yeah, especially with teenagers. Teenagers are already wrestling with all or nothing thinking. And so we can really reinforce that if our discipline is that way. And we really are trying to get them to learn to not be all or nothing all the time. And so we can help teach that there. And I'm glad you're talking about that, because that was definitely the next thing I wanted to get to, which is our children learn the most discipline from watching us and seeing how we are living our lives. And so that modeling and what we live by example is truly more powerful than any consequence we're ever going to attempt to give our kids. And so this goes back to our conversation about power struggles, emotionally caring for ourselves, making sure that we are doing all the self-care things we need to do to be as clear-headed and proud of our interactions as possible with our families. You know, if they are getting in trouble for how they express their anger, but we are not expressing our anger in a way that lines up with what we're asking of them, we're never going to teach them what we want them to learn. If we're telling them, you know, you've got to do your homework before you can watch TV, but they see me watching TV and then staying up late at night while I'm doing my work or something, it just, that speaks more to them than our words.
Yeah, that's a great point. Today was great. Thank you so much. I think some of these concepts are really can be life-changing when we put them into practice with our kids. Definitely life-giving in our parenting. So we appreciate your time today. We thank you, Ashley, for being with us. And as always, if we can help you in any way, please call us. We have lots of different counselors, and we are ready to come alongside you as a parent. This is definitely a team sport that parents need help. We need to empower each other and encourage each other and really just lift each other up, because it is hard, but it's the greatest job that we have. So thank you, Ashley, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you for having me.